Cassettes are making a big comeback, especially in Japan. Yeah, the Japanese love cassettes, especially the under 30 set, because they never experienced the format before and they like the sound of it better than what they hear online. Then you couple that with the fact that cassettes are available for as little as $7 a piece, so they're way less than vinyl, and that's a reason for the resurgence there. We have seen a resurgence in the United States, but not like that, not like in Japan. Welcome to Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle. If you've been following me for any length of time, and we've been doing this for 10 years now, you know that every year I do a year in review podcast where I look back at what I think are some of the biggest stories. And then the following week, I do a predictions for the upcoming year and also look back at the predictions from last year and see how right or wrong I was. There's plenty of each. So let's get on with it here. Our year in review. And what happens here is that we're going to look at both the year in music production and the year in music business. So the first thing that I think is really interesting is the fact that we keep on hearing so much about immersive audio, how it's taking over the world and everybody's converting their studios to Atmos. And really, that's not the case. Production Expert did a survey, and they found out that, well, this is in post and music, by the way, in music, 70% of all engineers and studios have zero inquiries about doing immersive audio. Only 20% have some interest at all. In post-production, where you'd figured there'd be a lot more action, there is, but only 52% have... Well, let me rephrase that. 52% have no action at all. 30% have some, and 9% have just about all that they do is immersive. Now, the interesting thing is that most studios, engineers don't charge extra for an immersive mix, and they include it with the stereo. While some add anywhere between 20 and 60%, immersive mixes could actually be fairly involved. So this is kind of scary. You're doing a lot of extra work and you're not actually getting paid too much extra for it. There's a couple of interesting twists to this. First of all, Amazon Prime dropped both Dolby Vision HDR and Atmos. And what they're doing is they're forcing you to pay an extra $299 in order to get it back with no commercials. The last thing I'll say on this is the fact that there's virtually no consumer demand for immersive music. Now, of course, for film and television, yes, works great. For music, not so much. And as a matter of fact, most consumers don't like it. So I think that tells you who's been driving it. And it's been record labels and it's been distributors for the most part that have been driving this whole thing. And they'll stop soon. All right, this is something I found kind of interesting. In Chechnya, they've really taken silliness to a new level by placing limits on musical tempo. Yeah, there's really going to be a tempo police, making sure that songs are at just the right speed for that country. And what they basically said is all musical, vocal, and choreographic works will be subject to new limits of between 80 to 116 beats per minute. That's according to the Chechnya Cultural Ministry. The interesting thing about that is the fact that their national anthem is, it's something like 72. So kind of defeats the purpose right there. So yes, it's true. The tempo police are coming for you, at least if you live in Chechnya. This is kind of sad. Sam Esh closed all their stores, and that was probably the last remnant of 48th Street Music in New York City, which was fantastic in its heyday. The other sad part is it was exactly 100 years old, and it was family-owned the whole time. Once there were 44 Sam Ash stores, but it was down to 26 when it closed. And you're probably wondering why this happened. Well, in 2023, COO Sammy Ash died. And he was the driving force behind Sam Ash Music. And the rest of the family really didn't want to take that responsibility. And this is something that you have to be into in order to make it work. So that's a sad kind of commentary on music stores, but Samash Music is no more. Here's a good one. There's a new noise in town, and it's green. Yeah, you've heard of pink noise and white noise and brown noise and all that stuff, but green noise is relatively new. It's mostly mid-range, and it's currently being used for sleep therapy. So what makes it different from everything else, it begins to roll off at about 500 hertz. So many people find that calming, and it lowers their heart rate, and they even get an enhanced mood. Think waterfalls, and that's what you're going to find. This is really sad. The record plant in Hollywood closed. This was once one of the three record plant facilities, the other two being in New York City and Sausalito. And all three were really fantastic and put out some great music. The New York City studio closed in 1987, while Sausalito closed in 1982, but it continued to operate after that as The Plant, it was called. And they're still trying to open it and start anew. It's been kind of dormant for a while. It recently reopened under the name 2200 Studios. This studio was partially responsible for some big hits by the Eagles, Hotel California, for instance, Springsteen, Born to Run, Fleetwood Mac, Rumors, Metallica, Kanye West. There's a whole load of superstars that would record there, and that was kind of one of the things that every engineer and producer and artist wanted to do, is record at Record Plant. Unfortunately, it's no more. This is kind of interesting. Henson Studios, which used to be A&M Studios, was sold to John Mayer and a group of investors for $40 million. There's good and bad news here. First of all, this is one of the most fantastic places, not only in Hollywood, but the world. It used to be the Charlie Chaplin sound stages and studios. In other words, Charlie Chaplin did all his movies. There's a huge soundstage. It's really quite nice. It's also where We Are the World, if you recall that. That was where it was shot. But there's really some great studios there. I spent a lot of time there when I first came to Los Angeles and really enjoyed it. It always sounded better than any place else. Well, John Mayer and company bought it. And the good part about that is it will probably still stay a studio. And I think it's historically important, so maybe that will stop it from changing too much, at least the look of it. But it's one of the most fantastic places. Kind of sad. Finale was discontinued. So if you use that scoring platform, you can still continue to use it because it will work, but there won't be any more updates. And it will actually work until August 2025. And at that point, you won't be able to reauthorize it or install it on a new computer. So why did this happen? Well, developer Make Music said that maintaining Finale's millions of lines of code simply isn't worth it anymore. There's a lot of competitors. Sibelius kind of took over from it, but there's many competitors. And in fact, they're all really good. So if you've been a Finale user, or you are a Finale user, it's time to look for an alternative. This is very interesting. Fender now has a pre-certified, pre-owned program. They teamed up with Reverb, the online music sales platform, music gear platform, and are basically offering a used Fender guitar amplifier that's been gone over, brought up to spec, plays, sounds really good, at 25% off retail. So this probably isn't as good a deal as you can get off of some sites like Reverb, for instance, where someone's selling a used guitar. But the fact of the matter is, after it's gone over by Fender, it's in great condition. Now, why do you think they did that? Well, it's because the secondhand guitar sales are very robust. Matter of fact, better than retail, normal retail. So they wanted to get a little bit of that action. This is kind of sad. Guitar Player ended its print edition, Guitar Player magazine. It was in production for 58 years. The website's going to continue. So that's the good part. You'll still be able to read great articles about the guitar. It just won't be available in print anymore. So again, why did this happen? Fewer people are playing the guitar. Fender did a study recently where it found out that 90% of new players quit within 3 months. The remaining 10% become really rabid enthusiasts. And at the very least, they purchase 5 to 7 guitars and multiple amplifiers over their lifetime. That's at least worth $10,000. So there's a market still. It's just not what it was. And it's not big enough for a print magazine anymore. And who reads magazines? I found this interesting. The famous Abbey Road EMI TG12345 studio that used to be in Abbey Road Studio 2. It's been used on Beatles records and Beatles solo projects and just about everything you can think of. That's actually been sold. One of the big problems about something like this is that old is the fact that it really takes a lot of maintenance to keep it going. And it pulls a lot of juice, so it's really expensive to run. But you get a famous sound. The interesting part here is I know a lot of, or knew a lot of the Abbey Road engineers from way back then that used it, and they didn't like it much as compared to the previous tube consoles that it replaced. But that being said, it probably sounded better than just about anything else of its time that was solid state. Speaking of consoles, another famous console was sold. This was a custom one-of-a-kind console from Universal Audio that was in Caesar's Palace since 1966. So it was actually built by the original Universal Audio founder, Bill Putnam Sr. It was comprised of 8 1008 tube preamp modules, 21 508 EQ modules on each channel in the echo sends, 3 UA550 filters, 3 UA500 EQs, and 3 Langevin graphic EQs, plus color-coded Langevin faders. So this was used, if you went and heard a show in the big showroom at Caesar's Palace, the audio went through this console. Once again, I would imagine this would be a nightmare to have in your studio, just keeping it running and also from the juice that it would pull. But again, you want that sound. There it is. Well, here's something that's interesting. According to music data company Luminate, Luminate is owned by Billboard, by the way. And they're the people that's responsible for the Billboard charts. So they have a lot of music data. And they found a number of song trends that were pretty easy, pretty interesting. 45.6 million. Actually, I think I have my screens backwards, but that's okay. You get the point. 45.6 million tracks online received 0 plays. And the big problem with that is that there's so many songs that are online, 86%, that receive fewer than 1,000 plays. 43% had fewer than 10 plays. It's kind of sad. It means there's all sorts of music online. It's great to have it online, but if nobody listens, is it really there? The Elvis Act. This was a law that was enacted in July, and basically what it was all about is you can't use AI. An AI sound alike. You can't use AI for a photo or a photo or just about anything of a music artist in Tennessee. So if you try to impersonate a music artist in any way using AI, you're violating the Ellis Act. There are versions of this in the U.S. Congress, have not passed. I wouldn't be surprised if they will, though. But this is now a law in Tennessee. So this is part of music business here. Around 46%. Yeah, see. Okay, here we go. Somehow we get out of line here. Hi, I'm Bobby Osinski, and I'm a best-selling author of several books on recording, mixing, and mastering that are considered the gold standard by many. I recently created a new resource for songwriters, artists, bands, and producers, and anyone looking to fix common mixing problems so they can get a better result, stop wasting time experimenting, and not get buried in information overload. I'm calling it the Mix Fix Playbook, 15 quick solutions to common mix problems. These fixes are well known among top mixing pros, but you probably never knew they existed. If you're looking to create mixes that stand up to what you hear on the radio, Spotify, or TV, go to go.bobbyosinski.com/mixfix to check it out now. So there's a lot about TikTok. TikTok now allows 30-minute videos. Originally, it was 15 seconds per clip, and then it went up to 60 seconds, and then 3 minutes, and then 5 minutes, and then 10 minutes. Last October, it topped out at 15 minutes. And there's some reasons why they upped it. Well, first of all, it has to do with money. There's more room for ad placements. And also, they want to keep creators off of YouTube. There's a lot of interesting twists on this, and we'll get to them all here. Here's another one. And Universal Music and TikTok. Universal Music got tough with TikTok. Or tried to. So what it did earlier in the year was that Universal Music withheld its artists from being on TikTok. And this went on for several months. And what it was trying to get was a higher royalty rate. And artists complained, they complained, they complained. Eventually, they worked out a new royalty deal. But no one knows what the rate is. And the artists definitely haven't benefited. Who won what? Which takes us to the next thing about TikTok. TikTok US Music shuts down. This is kind of interesting. TikTok Music is their service, their music service that was meant to compete with Spotify. Before it even opened, they shut it. Three reasons. First of all, they probably couldn't get the licenses from the major record labels. Major record labels probably said, "You're not paying us all that much to begin with. Why should we give you anything else?" And that's kind of what happened. The other thing was that in the countries that actually did have TikTok Music, the conversion from TikTok to TikTok Music wasn't all that much. And then finally, they kind of knew they were going to get blocked in the United States. So why go any further with it? Which brings us to the big one here. TikTok is about to be banned in the United States. And this is pretty much all but certain it's going to happen now. Just last week, an appeal failed. TikTok was appealing the judgment. The judgment went down in the middle of the year that they were going to block it in the United States. So why would they do that? Well, a lot of people think it's a threat to the youth of the United States, meaning that they're so addicted to it that it's harming their emotional well-being. And there's a lot of evidence that actually says that. But an underlying reason that's not being talked about much is a security threat, the security concerns. And it's basically that the Chinese government owns TikTok. Now, they don't say it, but they really do. So what's happening is TikTok is collecting data on all the Americans that are using it. And the United States government is afraid of that. And they're also afraid of what might happen as a result, not so much from the data, but how they might infiltrate your phone, for instance, and your computer. This is going to happen. It's going to happen the beginning of January. There's one last-ditch effort that TikTok is going to do, and that is they're trying to take it to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court does not have to hear this. So they might just say, lower court already decided on this. It's blocked. The United States is just the latest country to do this. India, Australia, Denmark, France, the whole European Union, Canada, and Belgium have already banned TikTok. And guess who else has banned it? China. Why would you ban your own app? Think about that one. But there's a silver lining in this. There's a lot of users that have already anticipated this is going to happen. So it turns out that teens use YouTube way more than TikTok. As a matter of fact, 90% of teens use YouTube, only 6% use TikTok. And it's about the same for Instagram as well. So already there's been a migration to other platforms. And that's going to continue. And just about anybody that's kind of smart has seen the writing on the wall, because this has been all over the news in the last year. Here's one that isn't too surprising, but the fact of the matter is now it's been quantified. So it really is hard to make it in the music business. And now we know how hard. There are now 3,642 new artists every day that are being added according to Chartmetric. And they measure global streaming data, so they should know. The last year alone, there was 1.3 million new artists. 64% are solo artists, while 75% are male or identify as he, him. A full 87% of artists that are streaming never gain any traction at all. So we know how this works. It's always been tough. Music business has never, ever been easy. But the fact of the matter is now we can quantify it. Cassettes are making a big comeback, especially in Japan. Yeah, the Japanese love cassettes, especially the under 30 set, surprisingly enough. Why? Well, because they never experienced the format before and they like the sound of it better than what they hear online. Then you couple that with the fact that cassettes are available for as little as $7 a piece, so they're way less than vinyl. And that's a reason for the resurgence there. We have seen a resurgence in the United States, but not like that, not like in Japan. There's labels that are cassette only. There's quite a few of them, as a matter of fact. And there are a lot of artists that would prefer to make their own cassettes because they can make as many as they need. They're cheap, kind of easy to do. So we're seeing a resurgence of this, especially on a club level. There are some politicians that are looking out for musicians. There was actually a bill presented to Congress called the Living Wage for Musicians Act that would supplement artists' income from streaming by adding a 50% levy on streaming music subscriptions. That would mean everybody's music subscription to every platform would go up by 50%. There's no chance that'll ever happen. So I don't know if this is a political stunt or if it was someone that really cared about musicians, but either way, there's probably zero chance that this is going to happen, unfortunately. Okay, I have something here that I have my screens kind of out of order, but I told you before, I think you briefly saw a screen that said there are three song trends. And this is over the last year that we've seen. Okay, what are they? In general, slower tempos for all hits. And as a matter of fact, there's a big increase of songs that the tempos are below 79 BPM. The second thing is there are way fewer pop songs on the charts, only 37%. And also, there's an increase in rhyme density in songs. Rhyme density is the number of rhyme syllables divided by the total number of syllables. Who thinks of these things? Well, there are people that spend a lot of time. But there is a reason behind it all. Rhyme density, even if you don't realize it's there, it's often associated with greater artistic quality and creativity. So it's something that you kind of want, even if you're not doing rap or hip hop. Now, what's on the screen here? Let's get to it. Deezer deleted 26 million tracks last year. That was 13% of its catalog. Why? Well, these are songs that haven't been listened to in the last year, the last 12 months. So what you have here is there's a whole lot of dormant songs, and Deezer said, why should we have them on the platform if nobody listens? And they deleted them all. This is going to be an ongoing trend. You wait and see. As a matter of fact, let's get to the next one. Spotify changed its royalty structure. Basically, what they said is, you won't get paid on a track until it reaches 1,000 plays. Now, 1,000 plays isn't a lot of money. It's $8, something like that. Somewhere between $3 and $8, depending on what country they're coming from, what time of year, for instance. But that's not much for a single artist, but you add it up over millions of artists, and that's a lot of money that they're keeping. Eventually, they pay it to you, but the fact of the matter is, it's like a loan to them. Now, on the good side of this, Spotify has also come down pretty hard on record labels and distributors like TuneCore and CD Baby, and they told them they'd have to get tougher on songs that they upload or end up paying for it financially, and they do that with a reduction in royalties. So what they're saying is TuneCore, CD Baby, any of the music distributors, you have to be careful about what you upload. No AI music, no white noise music, and no songs that are 32 seconds long, because you need at least 31 seconds before it's credited with the play. So what would happen, you have a lot of, not a lot, but you had some so-called artists, producers, that would make dozens, hundreds of 32-second songs that were nothing but white noise, and then they would put them in a playlist and claim it was for, oh, relaxation. Well, they're getting tough on that. That's a good thing. Live Nation was sued by the United States government. It was an antitrust lawsuit. Why should you care? Live Nation controls most major venues in the United States, but also Ticketmaster as well. And also they're into artist management. So let's see, you have a company that controls the venues, manages the artist, and sells the tickets. Sounds like there's a conflict of interest there to me, and the United States government is coming down on it. Now, here's the thing. This was filed in the Southern District Court of New York. That's the toughest court, supposedly, in the United States. If something gets filed there, it usually wins. So keep that in mind for next year. This is kind of scary, but it was inevitable. Music consumers are paying less for streaming. And there's a number of reasons. Listenership has plateaued in the last year, meaning they're still adding users, but not like the 20, 25% per year that was happening, you know, 5 years ago, 6 years ago. Why did this happen? Well, just about every platform has raised its rates. 66% of music consumers have said they could no longer afford all of their streaming subscriptions. 60% of responders to the survey said they had to cancel a subscription in order to afford the new higher prices. So that means now you have people that are subscribing to one service where before they might be on two or three. And let's face it, you get the same music in all of them. So you basically find the one that's either the cheapest or the one that's the easiest to use for you. Apple Music has some new upload requirements, but this is actually a good thing. They now require that you include a credit for all three categories: writers, performers, and production and engineering. Again, we all want to see credits, and credits are important for writers, performers, and engineers and producers, because when other people like a song, other artists, and they say, who worked on that? Now they can find out. Used to be not a problem at all back in the vinyl days. You just look on the back of an album, and the album cover, and you found out. It's a lot harder in the streaming business, but Apple Music is trying to make it much easier for everybody. Now, here's another thing they did that a lot of people are not happy about. Apple is going to pay you a higher royalty rate if you deliver Atmos mixes. So again, I was telling you before that Atmos mixes, for a while, what was happening was it was a hot thing where record labels were paying a lot of money for an Atmos mix. And now they're hardly paying anything. As a result, you're getting Atmos mixes that, you know, aren't being turned out in 2-3 hours. And they sound like it. And they're getting paid a little more because of it. And this is a shame. The other thing about Apple is their Atmos mixes sound different from everybody else's. So you listen to something in a studio and it sounds good, and you play it on Amazon Music, for instance, and it sounds the way you expect. You play it on Apple Music and they use a different codec, so all of a sudden it sounds whacked. Nobody's happy about that. And that's one of the reasons why Atmos isn't taking off. Here's something that's happened in the last year. There's a big fear in the music business that there's no new artists that are really hitting it big. On TikTok, for instance, there may be songs that are really big, and there's quite a number of them, but it's only snippets of songs. And as a result, no one is really getting familiar with the artist. They hear the song, but they don't know who the artist is. They don't care. If the artist is lucky, the listener will follow it through onto Spotify and hear and discover them. But that's not really happening as much. So as a result, everybody in the music business is quietly freaking out about this. Venues are freaking out because they're looking at the artists that sell out their venues now, and they're legends, and they're not going to be around forever. So they need a farm team of artists coming up. There's not as many of them. Now, that being said, Sabrina Carpenter and Chapel Roan were big hits this year. And there's a couple of reasons. I mean, they kind of lucked out in some sort of way. Sabrina Carpenter, from her days with Disney, already had a built-in audience. And Chapel Roan was lucky enough to open up some shows for Taylor Swift. And that started her down the road to stardom. Speaking of which, Taylor Swift had a huge couple years here with her Eras tour. And supposedly it made a couple $1 billion. She's peaked. She's never going to be as big as she is right now. Or she was during the tour. Tour's over as of last week, the week before, and it's all downhill. Charlie XCX was really big this year as well. And actually, she's been building for a dozen years, 10 years. She's come up the hard way. That being said, she might have peaked as well. So the music business has really changed in that we're not seeing quite the legends that we used to see being developed. So with that, happy holidays, everybody. Thanks for listening. Next episode is going to be my predictions for 2025. And we'll also look back to the predictions that I made last year and see how many came true. Some of them didn't, but we'll go over them all. And I'll give you some things to look out for 2025. So if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at questions@bobbyosinski.com. I hope to see you next episode.